Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome to the program today Michael Wellman. His new novel is Versus the Demons. Hello, Michael.
Hi, Vic.
Michael, I've read your first two books. They were nonfiction. This is your first work of fiction. What made you decide to try this?
Well, I joked occasionally with people after the first two books that, as you know, the first one, Far From the Trees, was sort of a collective memoir of the neighborhood where I grew up and the kids that I ran with in that neighborhood, and then what happened to us as we all came of age and went our separate ways. And then the second book, Stubbs, which I consider sort of a journal of fatherhood, I wouldn't call it a sequel to Far From the Trees, but it definitely sort of picked up where that first book had left off, and the framework for it was just a box full of ticket stubs I collected over the years of being a father and different events that I went to with all or parts of our family. And I would joke with people occasionally that between those two books, I had pretty much exhausted everything that I literally knew from personal experience, and if I was going to keep writing, I'd have to start making it up. And so that's what I've done with Versus the Demons. And really the jumping off point for the novel is what I would consider, as a baseball fan, a pretty historic event that took place in Des Moines, my hometown, where I still live and have lived pretty much my whole life. I discovered by accident just a few years ago when I was at an Iowa Cubs game, that's the local AAA team that plays here, I was looking through their media guide or yearbook or something, and I saw a little nugget about the first night game in pro baseball history that was ever played under permanent lights that had happened in 1930 here in Des Moines, and I thought, I can't believe I've never heard of that before. Anyway, it sort of just marinated for a while, and I put it in the back of my mind as an event that would fit well into a broader story, and that sort of became, as I said, the jumping-off point for this book.
And that was the night that history was made at Holcomb Park, and it was also the night that a guy named Shorty Ursland was born.
Uh-huh.
And so you take it from one illumination to another. That's kind of the beginning and the end, isn't it?
Right. I don't know exactly how it came to me, but I was, you know, brainstorming about where I was going to go with this, and it dawned on me that with Shorty, the protagonist, being born in the middle of that first night game in 1930, a nice bookend to his personal story would be if he kind of spun out in the first night game at Wrigley Field, which happened in 1988. That probably came to me fairly easily and naturally because I'm a lifelong chronic suffering Cub fan. And I just decided, I guess at that point, to get myself off of square one, that the book would begin and end with those two events, and all I had to do then was figure out how to fill the intervening 58 or so years.
And Shorty, he's quite a character. How did you imagine this guy? Where did he come from?
Well, Shorty, his surname, Ursland, is, I guess, an extended family name on my mother's side of our family, although I altered the spelling a little bit because if the book finds its way into the hands of relatives, I didn't want them to think that I was deliberately telling Shorty Ursland's story. I used to hear a lot of anecdotes when I was a kid growing up about my grandmother's brother, Uncle Shorty. He was actually a farmer not far from Des Moines, and I just always was fascinated by that name, Uncle Shorty. And so that's how I picked him to be the main character in the story. And their side of our family is Norwegian-American. Snusville was still is sort of the informal nickname for that part of town in Des Moines. And Slater is another, it's a small town, 25 miles or so north of Des Moines, and that's pretty close to where my Uncle Shorty grew up and lived and farmed, and we used to go to Slater a lot. My grandmother lived there when I was a boy, and Slater also happens to be, it still is really a hotbed of semi-pro baseball. The Slater Nighthawks, I knew as a boy, were a real prominent team back in the day when it was common in rural areas, not just in Iowa, but in the Midwest generally, and, you know, for towns to have town teams.
Mm-hmm.
And Slater has a real rich history in that regard. And so I decided to make Shorty a ball player instead of a farmer, and away we went.
The book is Versus the Demons. Michael Wellman wrote it. And Shorty dreams of being a major league ball player, and he gets his shot in the minors, and we follow all his adventures as he bounces around from one minor league team to another. And his minor league team in Kentucky, that was quite an experience for him there. That really sets the tone for the whole book, doesn't it?
Yeah, Shorty actually kind of falls in love with baseball when he's a young boy. There's a Barnstormer game that happens in Des Moines, also at Holcomb Park, between a team of white major league stars led by Bob Feller, who is a Central Iowan. He grew up in Van Meter, Iowa. He leads a team of white major league players against a team of black Barnstormers led by Satchel Paige. And Shorty's about 5 years old at the time, and he goes to see that game, and he's just fascinated with it. And he becomes a good ball player, graduates from East High in Des Moines, and attracts the attention of Hal Trosky, who is another famous Iowa ball player from the past, who really was on track to have what probably could have been a Hall of Fame career until he got sidetracked by severe migraine headaches. But he used to have his best years rivaled those of Ruth and Gehrig, and he was a scout after he was forced into retirement. So Hal Trosky is a scout in this area, and he discovers Shorty playing at a tryout camp, signs him to his first contract, and sends him off to Madisonville, Kentucky in 1949. It's a Class D affiliate of the Chicago White Sox, and that's where Shorty goes for his rookie season. He finds room and board at a local widow's house, and the plot starts to thicken at that point. I got a little concerned as we went through. He goes from town to town, year to year, season to season, beating the bushes, kind of slowly but surely climbing the ladder of the bush leagues. But I don't want to spoil the eventual outcome of his career. But I was a little concerned there to the reader. I might get a little tedious as, you know, this year this happened and next year he went here and so on. But I thought that part of what I wanted to depict was, even now, but certainly back then, the life of a pro ball player was anything but glamorous, certainly in the bush leagues. I guess I wanted to have a fairly accurate depiction of the struggle it can be to follow your dream and feel like you're making progress towards it, but are you ever going to get there or not? You, of course, know you read the book, so you know how things turn out with Shorty. But besides his rookie season in pro ball, there's a real seminal personal event that happens while he spends that summer in Madisonville, Kentucky with the minors.
Nice, Michael, nice. You have to read the book to figure out why I think that was nice. The Kitty League, yeah, he was in the Kitty League, and I, of course, got a lot more out of this book than your average reader who isn't from Des Moines.
Well, I know you're a baseball fan.
Well, and I'm also from Des Moines, so when they want to go watch TV and they want to watch the 1948 Cleveland Indians play in the World Series,
yeah,
and they want to go somewhere, Shorty and his buddy, was it Olf?
Olf Olson.
They want to go and they see the TV somewhere where they're not known, so they go to the West Side, and they go to this little bar that is just down the street from my old neighborhood in Des Moines,
yeah,
And here's George the bartender. And I love the fact you brought George back to life because I have fond memories of George.
So do I. And you, as you hinted, you well know that the Greenwood Lounge and George holding forth there for a generation here in our hometown was sort of a rite of passage. And Shorty and Oaf start off watching the 48 World Series between the Braves and the Indians. Bob Filler, the local phenom by then, of course, he's the ace of the Indian staff, and they watched the first game of that series at Oaf's house, but their language gets a little salty, and they with Oaf's mother in the next room, and so they realize after game one that they've got to find someplace else to watch the game, and they just hop the trolley across town and sort of wander until they see a likely looking spot, and that turns out to be the Greenwood Lounge. And the 48 World Series also happened to be the first that was ever televised by anything that could be characterized as any sort of a national network. I was interested as I discovered researching it that the way they contrived this network was they sent an old B-29 bomber aloft somewhere in the east and beamed the original broadcast up to the plane, and somehow that was ricocheted from there west, as far west as the Middle West anyway. It was kind of I didn't see that coming, but as it emerged, I too thought it was kind of neat that they would land at the Greenwood Lounge of all places. And I could imagine George was actually in real life a Cardinal fan, but he was like a lot of us, like you and I certainly, he was first and foremost a baseball fan, and I could certainly imagine him holding forth there and presiding over this blue-collar gang of baseball fans rooting for the Indians and the local boy made good, Bob Feller.
Michael Wellman joins us. His novel is Versus the Demons, and the title could be considered by some to refer to the baseball team, the Des Moines Demons, but there's more to it, isn't there? This is also about personal demons.
Well, yes, it is, but it worked. It was not something I had to really reach for because, again, as you probably know, part of Des Moines' own long-standing history with pro baseball involved several incarnations of a team called the Des Moines Demons. They were... that game in 1930, the first night game, the local team at that time was called the Demons, and even though the addition of lights to minor league ballparks was widely credited with saving the minor leagues as America went into the Depression, in due course that addition of the Des Moines Demons went defunct, and eventually they were resurrected again in the mid or the late 1950s, and so it's interesting as the story goes on, and Shorty's career sort of winds through the hinterlands of baseball, and you know he's kind of climbing the ladder of the old farm systems used to go down as far as Class D, and those lower rungs of the ladder started to fall away as he was scrambling up trying to advance towards the big leagues, and eventually, I think it would be fair to say, and not spoil anything, to reveal that Shorty's career does finally find its way into that last edition of the local team, the local Des Moines Demons. But by then, his own personal demons have started to emerge and become a big part of his personal and spiritual battle, in addition to his ongoing fight to make it to the big leagues as a ball player.
And you have some great cameos in this book. You've already mentioned a couple of them, but I think my favorites are Mickey Mantle and Satchel Paige. Mickey Mantle actually encounters Shorty. They play together a little bit in the minors.
Right.
And of course, Mickey is destined for stardom. And then Satchel Paige is really at the end of his career when Shorty encounters him and meets him in person. I love the way you created dialogue for these guys, the way that you imagined what they would say.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that, because frankly, one of my real apprehensions in attempting to write some fiction has always been dialogue. And I certainly did the best I could to try and be true to what I knew of, you know, each of those characters that you mentioned. You know, Mickey Mantle, his personal demons are certainly well known at this point. And again, it was kind of a happy coincidence for me to realize at some point as I was working on the manuscript that, hey, Shorty Ursuline and Mickey Mantle were born at about the same time. And I tried to be wary of seeming overly contrived in the way his career unfolded, but I think it was legitimate that their paths crossed in 1950, as they did on another team called the Miners, coincidentally, in Joplin, Missouri. And yeah, Mickey even then was widely regarded as on the fast track to stardom, and of course that did happen with him. And
he was also a total wild man,
right? Yeah. And I think Shorty, as the story mentions, at that point early in his career, Mantle was a shortstop, and that's really where Shorty's given name in the book is Harold Ursuline, but Shorty eventually becomes his nickname by virtue of the position that he gravitates to on the field. Mm-hmm. And he, in the book, proudly declares himself a far better defensive shortstop than Mantle ever was, and it is a matter of record, I suppose, that that year in Joplin, Mantle, for all his offensive prowess, I think made 55 errors at shortstop. And so Shorty kind of realizes early on that he's never going to make the big time like Mickey probably will, but he always maintains that they actually do have a brief reunion at a golf pro-am event in Iowa City in the summer when Mantle was eventually inducted in the Hall of Fame. And the dialogue, it turned out to be something I was really afraid of in advance, but ended up enjoying. So I'm glad to hear that you as a reader thought it rang true and authentic.
The book is Versus the Demons. Michael Wellman wrote it and joins us on the program today. I've known you, at least from a distance, for many years. I think the first time I saw you, you were wearing a baseball uniform down at the Little League ballpark. We were both kids. You're a little older than I am. We went to the same high school. You have a really funny cameo in the book of probably the most famous writer to ever come out of our high school, Roosevelt High School. That's a child named Bill Bryson. I thought that was pretty cute, Mike.
Well, again, I grappled with that a little bit because I didn't want that to seem contrived either. But I as I mentioned with some of the other cameos, I think it made sense because in the late 50s, when the last edition of the Des Moines Demons, they were a Phillies farm team at that point, and I think it was Class B by then. But their beat writer for the Des Moines Register, the local paper, was Bill Bryson Sr. And there also was a real player on that team. I think he was the center fielder, and his name was Little Bill McGuiken. And so there's an event that's described kind of a preseason open house, meet the team kind of a thing, where Bill Bryson Sr. brings his then little boy, Bill Jr., and kind of thinks, you know, maybe he'd glob onto this local guy who's coming back home to play for the local team. And it doesn't really happen that way. He sort of drifts more towards the more obviously named guy, Little Bill.
Yeah.
But you're certainly right about him being the most prominent accomplished author from our hometown. It's interesting. I almost would, with embarrassment, mention that occasionally my first book, Far From the Trees, has been the subject of discussions of comparison with one of Bill Bryson's books, The Thunderbolt Kid, because that's a memoir of his childhood here in Des Moines.
Uh-huh.
And I haven't read all of Bill Bryson's books. I've read several of them, and the ones I have read, I've enjoyed tremendously. And I think I would not ordinarily deserve to be mentioned in the same breath as a writer with him, but what I always say when the books are compared is that yes, they are similar, because even though I didn't know him personally growing up, we had mutual acquaintances because we were close enough in age and from the same part of town. But I just always say that Far From the Trees starts off kind of as idyllic and whimsical as the Thunderbolt Kid, but then segues into some darker things that happened in the lives of myself and my old neighborhood pals after we got older, growing up in the, you know, the turbulent but spectacular 60s.
Yeah, well, I doubt if you guys ever stole a train car full of beer, but I digress.
Yeah, that's true. For all of the things I may have done, that was not among them. That's not on my resume.
Well, we've had Bryson on this program a few times.
Yeah,
before and after A Walk in the Woods, which is kind of like BC and AD, and we tried to get him on for A Walk in the Woods when it came out in paperback, and his publisher said, "Oh, he's in Australia. He can't do the interview." So I thought, well, what can I do? Well, I called up Stephen Katz.
Who we both know. Right.
And we did an interview with Stephen.
Who's going to be Nick Nolte, I understand.
Yeah. Nick Nolte is playing Stephen Katz?
Well, I read somewhere recently that after years of trying, Robert Redford is finally launching a movie version of Walk in the Woods, and he will be playing Bryson, and Nick Nolte will be playing Stephen Katz, if you can picture that.
I think Nolte's got the right voice for Stephen Katz.
I do, too. That's exactly what I thought.
Wow. I hadn't heard that. So you're in Des Moines, so you know this stuff. Well, we had Bryson on after that and for a different book, the Australia book. And I said, Bill, I said, what's up with this British accent? You're from Des Moines. And he dropped it just like that. It immediately sounded like a guy from Des Moines.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, it's good you called him on it.
Well, I had to.
I understand at this point he's regarded as a national treasure in Great Britain. He may even have been knighted by now.
I don't think so, but I'm sure he's expecting to be. Well, like I say, we digress, but that was really funny when you pulled him out and had him as a kid in your book, Versus the Demons. Michael Wellman joins us on the program today. So, what's it been like for you? I know the book's been out for a little while. What kind of a response are you getting?
Well, we had a release event on May 10th here in Des Moines at a local independent bookstore that's sort of become my little flagship, Beaverdale Books. Alice Meyer is the proprietor there. She's kind of the patron saint of local writers. And her store's been open about 7 years, and she told me recently that my first book, Far From the Trees, remains the best-selling title in the history of her store. And so that's the big feather in my cap at this point. I've told her I wish she had a national chain and instead of just the one branch here in town. But so anyway, so far so good. It's locally, it seems to be doing all right. I'm anxious, of course, to find, as an independent author, I'm anxious to find any and all ways to spread the word about it, and I appreciate your help with that. It's interesting. This whole aspect of the process is something I really didn't anticipate when I finally, like a lot of writers, I think I had wanted to do something real and tangible long before I ever did, and sat down and disciplined myself to make the effort. But I'm just now, in fact, in the days between you and I making these arrangements and talking right now, I've been trying to sit down and give some, you know, back away from the forest a little bit of the book and give it some real thought, because I've had to be so involved with aspects of it that, beyond the writing of it, like, getting it available and into print and trying to design a cover and that sort of thing, that, I feel like I've lost sight of it a little bit from being too close to just some of the mechanics and logistics of the publishing process. But I don't know about you, Vic. I think of you not only as a fellow baseball fan, but I also think that, like me, you have a certain nostalgia for the bygone days of baseball, and maybe even romanticize it a little bit, like I know I do in my mind.
Yeah.
And I I think of the book, I guess the points I want to hope are made. I try to take, I guess, some jabs at some of what's overlaid on baseball in its modern form. It's not just as simple as the fat player salaries and that sort of thing. As a fan, I'm bothered when I go to the ballpark with all the things that they do to keep people's attention. And, at the ballpark here in town, for instance, a kid goes in the turnstile, and then if he wants to, he can pay another $5 and go into a playground that they've got inside the ballpark, which I suppose is designed to keep the kids occupied while the grown-ups can go inside and drink beer and whatever. So I don't know. I try and I guess moan a little bit about the glory days that are long gone in some ways. And also, we haven't touched on this yet, but two characters in the story that are key are Billy Sunday and Henry Wallace, who also are prominent Iowans from the past. And I think, you know, they represent kind of like in the old Looney Tunes cartoons where, you know, there might be a little angel on Foghorn Leghorn's one shoulder and a little devil on the other. They represent, I think, the camps of struggle for Shorty's soul and Shorty's spirit. And I also decided in the midst of writing it that they kind of paralleled in some ways the polar opposite political camps that are always at war in our political culture these days. And and so I thought baseball is a context that I know a little bit. I'm more of a baseball fan than any sort of a political activist, but I thought it made a convenient context to explore that a little bit. And I would say that at book's end, it's unresolved. I think that's left for the mind of the reader to decide how that comes out, maybe. And but I thought baseball, I've been trying to tell people that I'm afraid will be scared off from the book because they think it's a baseball book. I've been trying to tell them that yes, the context is baseball, but I really don't think the story is about baseball per se.
Well, I really enjoyed the read, and just not because I'm a baseball fan, because I think it's a great read, and really appreciate your time on the program today.
Well, it's my pleasure. It's nice to, after meeting all those many years ago at Raccoon Valley Little League, it's been a long time since we've been voice to voice anyway, so it's nice to have the chance to talk with you.
Thanks, Mike. The book is Versus the Demons by Michael Wellman, and if you can't find it in your local bookstore, it's on Amazon.com and places like that. If you just look for Versus the Demons, Michael Wellman. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McInnes. Did you miss an episode of the Book Nook? Go to WYSO.org, where we have over 100 podcasts available that you can listen to anytime. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.